Thank you, Pastor Bo, for the opportunity to preach and to give this message. There's something special about coming into someone else's church, a church that I don't know, you don't know me, we don't know each other, and yet Pastor Bo was kind and generous enough to allow me the opportunity to preach and to bring the message, so thank you very much for that. I appreciate that. Before we get into things this morning, I want to thank Pastor Bo. I want to thank Southwinds as his church for your support of our seminary over these past 10, 11 years. You guys have been faithfully and sacrificially giving to our seminary, supporting theological education in Canada, helping my tuition and James' tuition to be lower than it would otherwise, so thank you. Really, we appreciate your support. It seems like again, I've been at the seminary for about 6.5 years, been there a long time now, and it seems like whenever an event comes up, there's always someone from Southwinds there that's serving or helping out or doing something. You guys are so involved with our seminary, so invested in it, and I so appreciate that as a student. I thought I'd share this just because I saw it at the table. Nicole, my wife, and I, we were having a heated conversation the other day. We love cross-country skiing. We're going down to Kananaskis. One of our favorite pens had died, you know, a pen that you write with, and we were lamenting that on our drive down to Kananaskis, and we got talking about, well, what's your favorite pen? She said, well, no, the one that just died is my favorite pen. What's your favorite pen? I said, it's that Southwinds church pen that we have. And I saw them over on the table, and never have I been filled with such covetousness in my life as when I saw a Southwinds church pen. The water bottle I love to run with, Southwinds church. That's you guys. So you guys are just all over my life. I mean, you're writing on my paper, helping me with my sermon. So thank you. It is really a privilege to be with you. You've made me and James feel so welcome. So thank you very much. Let me pray, and then we'll get into the message for this morning. Father, thank you for Southwinds Church. Thank you for their support of our seminary for these 10, 11 years now. Thank you for the way in which they give sacrificially and give generously. Thank you for the way in which they serve. And Father, the privilege it is to join them and to worship you this morning. Father, thank you for your word, that it has power, even today, that it speaks to us, even today, when it was written so many hundreds of years ago. And we ask that you would speak to us this morning by your Spirit, in Jesus' name, amen. I don't know what kind of post-day routines you have when you come home. For example, often when I come home from a day of school, Nicole's on mat leave right now, so she's just home with the kids, and usually the conversation goes, well, how was your day? And I'm a pretty detailed person, so I'll just kind of, you know, go through the mundane points of my day, but often it ends with, Pretty normal, nothing out of the ordinary. It was a pretty normal day, pretty standard. And every so often I get thinking, what even is normal? Every so often in conversations, maybe it comes up, oh, that was a pretty normal thing. You know, that was pretty expected, that was pretty usual. You know, but what is normal when we talk about that? Have you ever stopped to think about how would you define a word like that? There's some words in the English language that almost seem so boring, they seem impossible to define for the average person, apart from the help of a dictionary. So I thought, well, what does a dictionary have to say about normal? Normal is something that's usual, something that's typical, something that's expected. And I'm sure that doesn't shock you this morning. I'm sure you guys probably knew that already. And, you know, we can have normal days in life. We can be normal people, quote unquote. For example, if you were to meet a Canadian, right, we're all Canadians, if you were to be in a foreign country and meet a Canadian, chances are that person would, like Tim Hortons, it's roll-up season, so everyone likes Tim Hortons at roll-up season, chances are that person will have either played hockey or watched hockey or have a kid in hockey, so Tim Hortons and hockey, and they're probably going to be overly polite and apologetic. What's it mean to be a normal Canadian? At least those three things. There's probably more, but it's probably at least those three things to be a normal Canadian. But what about a normal Christian? How might we go about defining a normal Christian? Could we say someone that goes to church on a Sunday? Someone that maybe gives a portion of their money to charitable causes or to a church? Someone who believes in Jesus? Someone who reads their Bible? Those would all be good things, but is there something more than being a normal Christian besides those basic things? We're going to be looking at a passage of Scripture this morning found in the Gospel of Matthew. If you guys have Bibles, you can turn to them, or if you go on your phone, we'll be in the Gospel of Matthew. starting in chapter 5, verse 38. And this is a portion of teaching. The most famous sermon Jesus ever gave is called the Sermon on the Mount. So many quotable things. You don't even have to be a Christian to know some of the phrases that we're actually going to be talking about. Turn the other cheek. Okay, that's Jesus, all right? That's not secular culture. Jesus came up with that. Someone says that that's where it came from, right here. And this Sermon on the Mount that we're going to be looking at, it's like Jesus giving his Christian manifesto of what it means to live as a disciple and follower of Jesus in the world. So that's what we're going to be looking at. I guess just before we get into the text, Pastor Bo had mentioned in the weeks leading up that his desire for his church, for you guys, is to live as people who are sent. Live as people being on mission with Christ in your relational networks. I thought that was awesome. Awesome, awesome goal, awesome vision. And my hope and prayer is that these minutes together and that this Bible passage will help us understand a little bit more about what it might mean to live on mission with Christ in your relational networks. So Matthew 5, starting in verse 38, and here's what it says. You've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, don't resist an evildoer. On the contrary, if someone slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. As for the one who wants to sue you and take away your shirt, let him have your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to the one who asks you, and don't turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. And we'll stop there for now. Jesus starts this passage by saying, you've heard that it was said, quoting familiar, well-known words to his audience. Maybe they aren't familiar to us, but the people that he's speaking to multitudes at this point in his life, and they all would have known what he's talking about when he says, you've heard it said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. That's common. That's like the law of the land. Everybody knew what that meant, and Jesus is gonna build on that. You know, maybe we hear words like that, like an eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, and think, oh, that sounds so harsh, so vindictive. And it really, it wasn't. If you go back and look at it, it was actually, it was a good thing. It was like this idea of just payback or retribution for something bad that's been done. You know, an eye for an eye, yeah, okay, it makes the whole world blind. We get that. We know that. We've heard that before. But it's meant to limit the wrath and the vengeance that people take on other people. And Jesus is about to now reinterpret that. And he says, you guys used to live under this eye for eye, tooth for tooth law. Someone does something to you, you do something right back to them. But now Jesus says, don't resist the evildoer. Don't resist this person that seeks to wrong you. Don't resist the evildoer. He's talking about personal vengeance here, not talking about legality. But Jesus is going to, in these verses, he begins to redefine what normal looks like for his followers. He says, don't resist the evildoer. Why not, you might think? You know, why shouldn't a follower of Jesus resist the person that wants to wrong them? Resist someone who wishes bad things upon them, maybe actively, maybe passively. Jesus says, that's so culturally normal. Everyone around you is living by this law, by this unspoken, at that time it was written, by this unspoken but written law. Everybody is living by that. The whole world functions by this eye for eye, tooth for tooth thing. And I'm calling you for something different. Can't we relate, though, to this desire that Jesus is speaking against? I mean, who doesn't want to resist someone that wrongs them? Someone that hurts them? You know, maybe some evil person, however you might define evil in your life. Who doesn't want to get payback? You know, someone wounds you with their words, physically, with their actions, something. Who doesn't want to pay them back? Let me show you how much you wronged me. Let me show you how much you hurt me. Who doesn't want to get back their pound of flesh from the other person? And, you know, maybe in Canada, maybe that would take the form of passive aggressiveness, okay? You know, maybe we wouldn't outright go aggressively attack someone, but who doesn't want to pay back the evildoer that's wronged them? This is so normal. And yet, in the midst of this normality, Jesus says, I'm calling you to something different. Don't retaliate. Don't retaliate. Don't pay back this eye for eye, tooth for tooth business. It was a good command when it was given, but I'm saying don't fall into that trap. Don't be like everyone else around you. And then Jesus moves on in these next verses to give four examples from what would be for them everyday life about what this teaching looks like practically. Now, it's going to be different for us, but we can learn some things from this. So right away, it's the first command. He says in verse 39, if someone slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other to him also. You know, you might hear that at first and think, oh, well, he's talking about physical aggression and violence. It's not exactly saying that. Jesus isn't exactly saying if someone punches you in the face, say, okay, hit me again. Come on, just hit me again. He's not exactly saying that. That was an insult in those days. That was like this backhand across the face. It was so humiliating. It was a cultural expression of humiliation and insult. And Jesus is saying, don't pay back insult for insult. If someone humiliates them, don't try and humiliate them back. He says, let them keep doing that. Let them keep insulting you if they so insist on that. Don't think that you need to insult them right back. Don't stoop to their level. I'm calling you to something different. Don't do that. Don't trade insults, even if that means you receive more from the person. Don't humiliate someone else just because they've done it to you, even if that means they're going to humiliate you even more. I don't like hearing that. That's not easy to follow. But he keeps going. As for the one who wants to sue you and take away your shirt, let him have your coat as well. He's saying this person that wants to wrong you and take something valuable from you, let him have even more. Generously give them more than what they're even trying to get. You know, as I was thinking about this passage, I thought, you know, maybe this would look, and this is an exact example, but maybe this would look something like, you know, the guy on the street that gets robbed at knife point, at gunpoint, and so, you know, the guy surrenders his wallet, and as the robber is running away, you know, joyful that he's got this wallet, the Christian says, oh, hey, come, you forgot 20 bucks. I got 20 bucks in my pocket I actually forgot to give you. Here, take that also. Take this 20 bucks also. Jesus is saying, that's the kind of thing I'm calling you to. Not this attitude of, okay, fine, you take exactly what you're wanting, but nothing more. Jesus says, no, if there's people trying to take advantage of you, he says, give them more than what they're even asking. Go above and beyond what is expected. And that's expressed in the third one. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. In those days, this was like a political kind of thing. So back in Israel in the first century, the Romans, they were the rulers of the time. They had their vast Roman Empire, and they controlled everything, okay? They controlled everything. And part of Roman life was they could conscript service from the ordinary citizen. So they could tell, if you're just going about your daily business there, some Roman soldier, some Roman politician, some Roman person of the state could grab you and say, you, come walk 1,000 steps and carry my stuff and help me move this thing. That's like what Jesus is talking. So you better believe, if you're a Jewish person back then who hates the Romans because they're enemies, you're going to be counting your steps. 998, 999, 1,000, you're going to drop that stuff and say, see you later, I'm walking back to what I was doing. No thanks. I'm done with what you conscripted me for. I've done my service. Now it's up to you. And Jesus is saying, no. That's not what things look like for followers of me. If you follow me, Jesus says, you go that second mile. You go 2,000 steps when 1,000 is asked. You don't stop at the normal point of service. You willingly go over and beyond what is expected of you, even in this case for people who are your vowed and hated enemies. Invaders of your land. Jesus says retaliation isn't even warranted against them in that situation. And the last one he says here, verse 42, give to the one who asks and don't turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. It's like he's saying, refuse to seek vengeance and actively practice generosity instead. You know, give help to the very people who are demanding things from you. In our world, this idea of payback and revenge, it's so normal. It's just normalized. Everyone does that. It's this sinful desire that we all have, to try and pay back. It comes so easily to us. It's just this natural tendency. But Jesus is saying, life in my kingdom is different. It's not like that. And see, sometimes I think actually our problem as humans isn't even so much the payback and the revenge. It's that we want to do more than was done for us. You know, it's this idea that, well, you hurt me, I'm going to kill you. You killed me, I'm going to make you suffer. Or you kill my family, I'm going to make you suffer. This idea that we want to pay back more than was done to us. We want to hurt the other person worse, which is so old. You find that back at the beginning of the Bible. There's this guy that, in Genesis chapter 4, if you read at the start of your Bible, this guy that brags about this guy, he says, a man wounded me, so I killed him. He struck me, I killed him. And That's just so normal that we want to go above what people do in our payback and revenge of others. And that's why Jesus is saying, I'm calling you to something different. But it's hard not to want to take revenge, isn't it? It's hard not to want to try and get even with the people around us that wrong us. And yet in the Bible we read, not in this passage, but elsewhere, God says, vengeance is mine. He says, that belongs to me. God says, I promise that there is a day coming. You might not see it in your lifetime, but there is a day coming where I'm going to set right all the wrongs. All the wrongs that have been done, I will set right on that day. On that great day, that day of the Lord, that day of God. But don't we want something more immediate than that? Don't we want vengeance and payback and equality right now? And Jesus is saying, just wait. God's not ignorant of that. God doesn't turn a blind eye to these things. God knows so intimately about the wrongs that are being done. Leave it in his hands. He's the just judge. He knows how to pay back for what the evil that has been done. So you don't take that into your own hands. Don't step into God's realm. You leave that up to God. Let him take care of that. Jesus says, what I'm calling you to is something different, something that's going to make people's heads turn. And I think even for us, this is a radical teaching. It would have been back then, and it is in our day today. But maybe at this point, you're still thinking, okay, maybe I can live with this don't retaliate mentality, this don't retaliate teaching that Jesus is calling for. Maybe I can live with that, but deep down, I'm going to hate that person still. I'm going to hate that person that wronged me. I'm going to hate that person that did me this injustice. I will hate them. I will detest them. Maybe aware of that, Jesus actually goes on in verse 43, and this is what he says, verse 43 to 48. You've heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. For he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward will you have? Don't even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers and sisters, what are you doing out of the ordinary? Don't even the Gentiles do the same? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. So he starts in verse 43, again, with familiar words, familiar teachings. You've heard that it was said. Yes, everyone then had heard that it was said. Everyone knew what he was saying. Love your neighbor. Of course, that's nothing shocking. Who is your neighbor? Well, is it someone that lives beside you, you know, in Cranston or whatever community in the southeast you live in? It could be, yes. That is in a very real, literal sense your neighbor. But your neighbor is also someone that's part of your community, part of your circle, your relational circle, someone you're in close proximity to relationally. That's who Jesus is talking about here. Who is your neighbor that people were commanded to love? Well, these people that were close to you. Yeah, that makes sense. But now instead of hating our enemies, Jesus is saying, instead of hating those who wrong you or this evildoer that Jesus has just described, this person that's done you wrong, instead of hating them, Jesus says, here's what I'm calling for. Love them. Pray for them. That's what I'm asking for. A crazy teaching. Jesus, how can you call for this? How can you ask us to not only try and not get revenge, not retaliate against the people that wrong us, but how can you ask us to love the people that wrong us and to pray for them? Pray for their well-being? Why does he do that? He says in verse 45, say, you may be children of your Father in heaven. Why do this? Show yourself to be a child of God. Show the world that it runs in the family. God does it. I'm his child. I'm in a relationship with him, so I do it too. And Jesus says, look, you can see this from nature around you. God is good to all people. He makes the rain and the sun on everyone, righteous, unrighteous, just, unjust. Everyone gets these common blessings. And in an agricultural society like they lived in back then, I mean, that is your lifeblood. If you don't have sunshine and rain, it's game over for you. But, and you know, imagine how silly that would look if for every unrighteous, unjust person who is in not living in relationship with God, imagine how silly it would look like if that person didn't experience sunshine. If wherever they walked, there was this little cloud above their head. Or if they didn't experience rain back then when they needed rain so much. It would look so silly. And Jesus is saying, guys, look at nature. You can see that God's good to everyone. He allows everyone to live. He allows everyone to have a profession, everyone to make a living, to provide for their family. God has these common graces that everybody can experience. He's good to all. And Jesus is saying, I'm not calling you to any more than what God is already doing in the world right now and has been doing for hundreds of years before this. That's what I'm calling you to, he says. Show yourself to be children of your Father. And then Jesus goes on to give two examples to really drive this point home for his hearers. These reasons why he's calling his followers to love their enemies. The first one is in verse 46. He says, for if you love those who love you, what reward will you have? Don't even the tax collectors do the same? Tax collectors, we don't really have those people nowadays. That was a first century kind of thing. But tax collectors essentially were scoundrels. They were like legal thieves, you can think about it. So, you know, in Israel, you're a Jewish person. A tax collector was working for the enemy Roman government, okay? So you hated them because they worked for the enemies that were invading your land, preventing you the freedom that you always wanted to have and that you had been promised. And what do? They're taking your money from you. And not only that, but they're probably taking more money than they ought to take because they're feeding their own pockets with it. And these terrible people that everyone in culture, everyone in society hated back then, Jesus saying, look at them, even they love their own kind. So if you love your friends, that's nothing commendable. Everybody does that. There's nothing significant about that. There's nothing special about loving the people that are just like you. That's why I'm calling you to be different, Jesus says. That's why I'm calling you to a different standard. Verse 47, he says, and if you greet only your brothers and sisters, what are you doing out of the ordinary? Don't even the Gentiles do the same? And, you know, greet, we might think of this as, hey, how's it going? So, okay, Jesus is calling me next time I see this person that I consider my enemy to say, hey, how's it going? And just keep walking to mind my own business. No, that's not what he's talking about. This was like an expression of desire for another person's welfare. A greeting wasn't just saying hi in those days. It was something much more than that. Expressions of desire for someone else's welfare. That's what Jesus is saying. He says, you know, if you greet only your brothers and sisters, if you greet only those in your close relational network, what are you doing out of the ordinary? This is what the Gentiles do. The Gentiles, so again, in the first century back then, you could divide the world into two people categories for all intents and purposes. There's Jews and there's Gentiles. And that's kind of how it went. The Jews, you know, they thought of themselves as the good people, God's people. Gentiles, they're like those bad, wicked, terrible people that everyone knew was terrible, and they themselves knew that they were terrible. And Jesus is saying, you know, even these terrible people, they do that. So what are you doing out of the ordinary if you only greet and are only kind to those people that are just like you? That's what the bad people are doing. That's what the known sinners are doing in the world. What's shocking about that? Think about that in your own lives for a second. Maybe, you know, maybe in your workplace you have someone that just really makes life difficult for you. I had an uncle who had a coworker, it was his boss, and he made life difficult for him for years. But imagine tomorrow morning, you're gonna go back into the office, you're gonna go into work, and if you're gonna greet your friends and, you know, say hi to them, have a conversation with them, check up on their weekend, is any one of your coworkers gonna stop and say, oh my goodness, look at what that guy's doing. He's talking to his friends. No, no one's gonna be shocked at that. But if you go to the person in the office that everyone knows you don't get along with, and you say, hey, it's roll-up time at Tim Hortons, and I thought maybe you could use a coffee, that might be something that your coworkers are gonna say, is going on with that person? No one would expect that. That is out of the ordinary. That is something different. That is something radical. And Jesus is saying, that is what I'm calling my followers to. Kindness or goodness that's restricted only to members of your own circle is no more than what the rest of the world already does and practices. So Jesus is saying, why would I call you to what everyone is doing? I'm calling you to something more. I'm calling you to something greater, something more than yourselves. I'm calling you to love your enemies and to pray for them. But this love he's talking about, it's not just some, you know, warm, fuzzy feeling or emotion that he's getting at. It's not like some romantic love where, okay, you know, you're my enemy, so maybe I should wine and dine you and take you out to eat. No, that's not what Jesus is talking about. It's not like this romantic kind of love, but willful acts for the benefit and well-being of another person. He's talking about the kind of love that manifests itself in an attitude that determines behavior. That's the kind of love he's talking about. This sacrificial kind of love. This attitude that determines behavior. An attitude, a posture that says, even though you're my enemy, maybe we wouldn't say that. Maybe you're someone I don't get along with. Maybe you're someone I'm always in conflict with. Maybe you're someone I don't like because you've wronged me time and time again. Jesus is saying, adopt a posture towards them where your attitude is for the good of the other person and your actions will benefit them and their life. That's what Jesus is calling his followers to here. In this world that's just so characterized by conflict and self-interest, Jesus calls for something that's countercultural, something that's different, going against the grain, going against the current, swimming upstream. That's what Jesus is calling. But it's something that's also normal. Normal for followers of him. Normal for the people of God following Jesus to love our enemies. It will not make sense to people around you. It's going to be something that's going to cause them to shake their heads, to slap their face a little bit and look and say, What's happening? What's that person doing? What's that Christian person doing now? That's just so crazy that we wouldn't expect. He's not calling us to draw our standards of normal from what the world around us is doing, but from what God is doing. That's our standard of normal, Jesus says. Draw your normalcy from God, not people around you. A person said, to return evil for evil is devilish. To return good for good is human. To return good for evil is divine. And that's what Jesus is calling his followers to return good for evil. The question I'd ask you is, who are the enemies in your life right now? Who are the enemies that Jesus is calling you to love? And again, maybe you wouldn't define them as enemies, but who are those people that are mean to you, disrespectful to you? People that maybe make you feel like you're never wanted or accepted. People that try and ostracize you. People you don't get along with. People that you're always in conflict with for some reason. Or maybe it's just simply people that make your life hard. Who are those people that Jesus is calling you to love right now? Maybe you're still thinking at this point, but God, you don't know the kind of people that are in my life. God, you don't know what so-and-so has done or what they are still doing to me right now. You don't know what I've had to been through or what I've had to go through or what I have been through. God, you don't know what life is like on a daily basis for me. God, why don't you try and love these people that are so hard for me to love in my life? God, why don't you lead by example in this and show me what it looks like to love my enemies? You make it sound so easy with your words, God, why don't you show it through your actions? And God says, I've given you the ultimate example of what this looks like. There's a lot of crazy verses in the Bible, actually. Every so often, I catch myself reading the Bible and I'll put it down and think, okay, that was pretty normal, right? Nothing out of the usual, nothing out of the ordinary. I've read it before. But every so often, I have to stop and I have to read it slowly and carefully. And every time I do that, I'm reminded that God has given us some crazy things in here. And one of these crazy verses that I want to read comes from Romans. And it was actually read by Josh earlier. I didn't tell him I was going to read this. He didn't know this. But this is what it says in Romans chapter 5. And listen to this. If that's your attitude, God doesn't know what kind of people are in my life. He doesn't know how difficult it is for me to love my enemies. He doesn't know what people have done to me in the past. He is calling me to something impossible. If that's your attitude, look what God says this morning. Romans chapter 5, starting in verse 6. For while we were still helpless, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For rarely will someone die for a just person. Though for a good person, perhaps someone might even dare to die. But God proves his own love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. What's that saying? It's saying God demonstrates his love for us in that while we were sinners, while we were people opposed to God actively opposing God, while we were enemies of him, that God loved us. But God didn't just say, okay, I love you. And end of story, enough said. No. It says that he proved it. He demonstrated his love. He showed it with his actions. And what is that action? He says by sending Jesus to die on the cross for us while we were sinners, while we were enemies of God and wanted nothing to do with him and were saying, stay away, I want to have control of my own life. God says, I love you, so I'm going to show you how much I love you. And that was the case for all of us. That was the case for me. When I wanted nothing to do with God, and yet he said, I'm going to show you how much I love you in the cross. That's where I'm going to show you how much I love you. In this world of retaliation for those who wrong us, This world of hate for those different than us, never mind our enemies, we have to wrestle with the question of whose normal we're going to fall into. The normal of Jesus and what he calls us to in his word, or the normal of the world around us that everybody is doing. And it's so easy to fall into the mold. Maybe we'll get encouraged in that, but no one outside of this room maybe will encourage you to fall into the normal of Jesus and what he's calling his followers to. See, Jesus came to set things right in the midst of a broken world, a world broken by sin and rebellion against God that can manifest itself in part by our desire for vengeance and retaliation and our hate for our enemies. But through the cross, God is saying that that's not how I created the world to be. That's not what I intended for it, but I want to fix it. There's something wrong. There's something terribly broken and wrong with this world. But through the cross, God is saying, I want to fix what's wrong in the world. And I'll do that myself. And it's going to be costly. And I'm going to do it for people that are my enemies right now. People who are on the opposite side, opposing me, wanting nothing to do with me. But I'm going to fix it, he says, through the cross, by sending my own son to die in place of others. See, maybe you're here today and you've already committed your life to Christ. Maybe you're already following him in discipleship. That's awesome. Don't forget what God's calling you to. Don't forget what Jesus is calling you to here this morning. Don't slip into the normal of what the world around you is doing, but live by this different standard of normal and show the world what it looks like for someone to live in relationship with God in obedience to his word. Or maybe you're here this morning and you haven't yet surrendered your life to Christ. Maybe you're still wondering whether it's worth it or not. Jesus is saying this morning, even though we're enemies by virtue of your life in action, even though we're enemies, I demonstrated my love to you by dying on the cross for you, dying the death that you should have died, taking your place on the cross, showing my love. So won't you come? Won't you come and experience relationship with me? Won't you come and experience what it looks like to live life with me, a life of freedom, and to live a new way of normal?